Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. October 16th marked World Food Day. 150 countries marked World Food Day by highlighting the increasing levels of hunger around the globe. According to the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, more than 800 million people are chronically hungry. Here in the United States, as many as 50 million people are suffering from what is now called food insecurity. As hundreds of millions of people suffer from hunger, approximately 1.3 billion tons of food is thrown out every year. That includes 45% of fruits and vegetables, 35% of fish and seafood, 30% of cereals, 20% of dairy products, and 20% of meat. Wasting food is not just an economic issue. Food waste also contributes to climate change. Americans throw away 30 to 40% of their food. The average American wastes 10 times as much food as the average Southeast Asian, and that is up 50% from the 1970s. So what explains this, and what can we do to reverse the food waste epidemic? According to the UN, if the amount of food wasted were reduced by just 25%, there would be enough food to feed everyone. So how can we get there? Today we are joined by Ben Simon. He's co-founder and CEO of Imperfect Produce. That's an Emeryville-based startup aimed at bringing cosmetically challenged, or another way to say that is ugly, fruits and vegetables to market at an affordable price. Every year, 20% of the produce grown in the U.S. is rejected from grocery stores simply because it has abnormal shapes or sizes. And Ben joins me in studio. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having me. We're also joined by Brian Lipinski, associate at the World Resource Institute's food program, where he works on issues of food loss and waste and food overconsumption. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Brian, there are so many numbers. It's kind of hard to wrap your head around these numbers, but I think the one stat that really got me was the one from the UN. If the amount of food wasted were reduced by just 25%, this is around the globe every year, there would be enough food to feed everyone. How did they come up with that number?
That number comes from a study from 2009 that looked at how much food is lost and wasted around the world, and then comparing that to the number of hungry and chronically food insecure people there are in the world today. So when you look at these numbers, yeah, you just have to reduce it by 25% to feed everybody, which is, you know, it seems like something we should be able to do. When we're wasting a third of all the food that's produced in the world, cutting that down by 25% really seems like something that needs to get done.
Yeah, it seems like this is definitely possible, and it seems like this shouldn't be a controversial issue. We're talking about food waste. So let's talk about how we got here, and, you know, just give us a visual of how so much food is being wasted. Again, every year, 1.3 billion tons of food is thrown out, and that is one-third of all food that is produced. So help us make sense of that.
Right. So you're right that it's not a controversial issue. Everyone knows that it's bad to waste food. What makes it complicated is that you really need to take action at every part of the food supply chain, from farm to fork. So when we refer to a distinction between food loss and food waste, food loss tends to happen closer to the farm, and that tends to be matters where, you know, storage was inadequate. Pests ate a crop while it was in storage, or not able to harvest everything due to insufficient labor. And that happens a lot more in sort of poorer parts of the world where the infrastructure might not be in place. Whereas we have a lot more food waste in places like the United States, where that's something where there's some intentionality to it, where I went to the grocery store and I bought two containers of strawberries and I only ate one of them. Mm. Or I ate three-fourths of what was on my plate. But then the rest of it, you know, wasn't enough for me to take home in a doggy bag. So I just let it get thrown out at the restaurant. So that's how it happens, is that each step in the supply chain, there's a new opportunity for loss and waste to occur.
And so how are, you know, the people who watch this closely, how do they come up with these numbers? I mean, who's monitoring all of this?
So the numbers are sort of our best guess of how much food is being lost and wasted, because in some parts of the world, there aren't great data points on this. So in some parts of the world, that's just not, it hasn't been a research priority. So in some cases, you're extrapolating off of studies in one. So there might be a study in Nigeria that then gets used to produce numbers for other countries in Africa, for example. So these numbers are sort of our best guess. We have a good sense of what's happening sort of at a broad level. So we know that the rough numbers are about right. And then what really needs to start happening is that specific countries and companies need to start taking a closer look at what's happening within their own boundaries and borders to get that more specific number to their own context. Because then once you know how much is being lost and wasted within your own boundaries, so to speak, that's when you can really start saying, okay, we as a company are wasting way too many tomatoes. Why are we wasting so many tomatoes? What are we going to do about that?
And Brian, Ben, that is where you come in, because your company, Imperfect Produce, is aimed at bringing ugly fruits and vegetables to market at an affordable price. Talk a little bit about what we're dealing with in the U.S., because Americans throw away 30 to 40% of their food, and the average American wastes 10 times as much food as the average Southeast Asian, and that is up 50% from the 1970s. We'll talk about why that number has gone up so much, but what concerns you the most about food waste here in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've been working in food waste for a while. And it really wasn't until about a year ago or a year and a half ago until I heard about this issue of ugly fruits and vegetables and the fact that about 20% of our fruits and veggies grown never make it off the farm because they're cosmetically challenged. They have some tiny defect that doesn't even affect taste or quality. You know, really, we're talking about issues of shape, you know, size, a little bit of discoloration, maybe a tiny bit of scarring, but only surface level things. And that on the whole, when taken, you know, to look at how much produce is grown, it's somewhere around 6 billion pounds of produce every single year is going to waste. And so I heard about that a couple years ago while talking to one of Food Recovery Network's advisors, Jonathan Bloom, who's a national author and expert on food waste, and basically trying to identify the biggest issues within food waste. Brian was talking about all these different touch points within the supply chain from farm to fork that we can take action on. And I was working on a previous organization with a different touch point and just heard about how much waste was happening at the farm level, and I knew that I had to do something.
So every year, 20% of the produce that's grown here in the United States is rejected from grocery stores. So is it the grocery store that says if there are dents in these apples and the banana is too brown, we just don't want it? Well,
yeah.
Bananas are grown in South America, so that wouldn't apply. But say apples, for example.
Yeah.
So if the apple has a bunch of brown spots on it, the grocery store says we don't want it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the grocery stores have marketing standards for their various produce that they give to the growers. And so at some of these packing houses, you'll literally see signs up with different shapes and sizes of apples and colors, and then some of them will have a big X on them, meaning that has to get discarded. And so, you know, some of these operations are huge, huge, and they're amazing operations. And I don't want to give the wrong impression that it's the grower's fault, because in my opinion, it's really not. They're just responding to the standards that the grocery stores are putting forward.
Is this a new phenomenon? Did this happen, say, back in the 70s? Or at what point did grocery stores start saying everything has to look perfect?
You know, I really don't know the full history of it. I just know that, especially, you know, definitely for the last few decades, as long as I've been alive, at least, you know, this problem has existed.
Brian, do you know?
I don't know if the standards were in place before, say, the 1970s. I know that, as Ben says, it has been for quite some time now.
And so, again, 6 billion pounds of produce goes to waste because these fruits and vegetables just don't look right. They're just not pretty. What is done with all of that food?
Yeah, so, you know, when that happens, the farmer will try to find a different outlet for it. So first thing they'll look at is processors. So some of this can be taken by processors, but there's different barriers to that as well. Like, for example, take pears. Really, the flavor profile for pears that we know, you know, and cut up pears and canned pears, or, you know, if a pear is finding its way into juice, the flavor profile that we know as consumers is really of the Bartlett pear. So if you have Comice pears or red pears or any other type of pear and you have surplus and it happens all the time, or you have ugly produce, You know, really often it will just go to animal feed, which is kind of the next step down.
Hmm.
Sometimes there'll be an outlet for it at the food banks. Actually, my co-founder, Ron Clark, helped to develop this really amazing program for the California Association of Food Banks called Farm to Family that currently rescues about 140 million pounds per year of this ugly produce from California farmers. But it's really just the tip of the iceberg. And actually, that 20% statistic, I believe, is supposed to be speaking towards what doesn't have a home with processors or the food banks, what is going to animal feed, what is going to compost, or what is going to the landfill.
Well, I love what you're doing with Imperfect Produce. So your goal is to bring these ugly fruits and vegetables to market at an affordable price. So tell us how that works and what response have you received from farmers?
That's right. That's our mission with Imperfect. You know, we're trying to find a home for these unloved fruits and veggies that otherwise wouldn't have one, and really trying to develop a market for this product that's always really been seen as a byproduct and always been seen as a waste product. And so we have two main distribution models. So the first is a produce delivery subscription here in the Bay Area. So we're about 9 or so weeks old with that program. We have about 750 local subscribers to the program. And so we're predominantly in the East Bay in Oakland and Berkeley, but we have a few drop-off points in San Francisco as well. And basically, you get a big heaping box of uglies for, you know, a big discount. So it's currently just $12 for a huge box of like 10 to 15 pounds of produce. So that normal box would cost like $20 in a grocery store or $35 or even more dollars for a traditional CSA or other program.
So right now this is all conventional, but I understand that organic is coming soon.
That's right. Yes. Coming soon. Good. We're just bringing on a full-time staff member to develop that organic supply chain.
And when you look at the amount of the, quote, ugly fruits and vegetables that do not make it to the grocery store, what's the difference between the organic and the conventional?
So I think most of the waste is in conventional, partly because there's such high demand for organic that they are just, you know, and the price point's so much higher that it's easier to find an outlet for it. Versus conventional, especially at some of these huge, huge packing houses where they're literally sorting 1 million pounds per day of a single item. You know, it's just so much more of that goes to waste than some of these small organic farms.
Brian, what do you think of this plan to get people to buy these cosmetically challenged or ugly fruits and vegetables?
I think it's great. I think that Ben is right that there's definitely a market for this. People are less bothered by these sorts of things than I think we're expected to be when we go to the grocery store and everything is supposed to be perfect. I know that I personally will now deliberately seek out some of those less attractive pieces of produce just because I don't want it to go to waste in the end. So if I'm based in Washington, D.C., and if there were an organization like Ben's, a company like Ben's here, I would be subscribing in an instant.
Brian Lipinski is associate at the World Resource Institute's food program, where he works on issues of food loss and waste and food overconsumption. And Ben Simon is the co-founder of Imperfect Produce. It's an Emeryville-based startup aimed at bringing ugly fruits and vegetables to market at an affordable price. Every year, 20% of the produce grown in the U.S. is rejected from the grocery stores just because it has an abnormal shape or size. That amounts to 6 billion pounds of produce every year going to waste. And so today we are talking about food waste. Here in the United States, 30 to 40% of food is wasted. The average American wastes 10 times as much food as the average Southeast Asian, and that is up 50% from the 1970s. And then this statistic is really important, and we're going to talk about how we can get to this point. According to the UN, if the amount of food wasted were reduced by only 25%, there would be enough food to feed everyone. And as the population is really growing, we're expecting 9 billion people in 2050. A lot of people say instead of producing more food and using more land, let's just eat the food that we're wasting and we wouldn't have to do that. So we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about food waste? What changes have you seen over the past couple of decades? Why do you think Americans are wasting far more food than we did just four decades ago? And if you work on this issue, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What are you noticing when you go to restaurants, you go to the big box stores? What really stands out for you when it comes to food waste? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Brian, again, 1.3 billion tons of food is wasted every year. Where is the most food wasted? At what level of food production does most waste occur?
So it varies depending on what part of the world you're in, where most of the waste occurs. So again, in poorer parts of the world, you really see it toward the farm and market levels, because in those parts of the world, it's a question of infrastructure. It's a question of, can I get my food to market? Can I harvest all my food? Do I have the labor for that? Do I have proper storage? So you'll see that very little of the waste occurs at the sort of consumption stage in those countries. Whereas in places like the U.S. and Europe, it happens much more frequently down toward the sort of restaurant, grocery store, and consumer end of the supply chain.
And so can you give us a little more information about where else it's happening, and then what could happen on the supply chain to reverse this trend?
Sure. So in the U.S. especially, at grocery stores, it would be things like changing ordering behavior so that you're not over-ordering. Because right now when I go into a grocery store, I expect to see full bins of apples and full bins of bananas and everything. So if we drop some of these sort of sacred cows of food service, where, you know, every single person needs to be able to pick from 100 different apples, or the first person into the restaurant and the last person in the restaurant or the cafe should have every single option available to them, that's one area where we can start making a change. At the restaurant level would be things like changing portion sizes. I know for me, when I go to a restaurant now, if I have just enough food, that's actually sort of a relief to me, because I'm so used to having too much on my plate. At the consumer level, it's things like making sure, keeping good track of what you're buying and what's still in your fridge, making good use of leftovers, understanding date labeling. Actually, date labeling is a major source of confusion for consumers. So there are a lot of very distinct small things that can happen that would all add up to a big change.
We have an email from Carla who says, I believe people here in the U.S. perceive abundance by what they see every day. Grocery stores with endless products, mounds of produce, etc. It's difficult for people to imagine the opposite when what seems obvious gives a different message. The power of what is visible. It could probably also be applied to how people perceive climate change and our impact. And so let's talk a little bit about these changes we've seen just over the last four decades. So the average American wastes 10 times as much food as the average Southeast Asian, and that is up 50% from the 1970s. Brian, why do you think those numbers have gone up so much?
I think, was it Carla? I think Carla has really actually hit it on the head there, that we have this sense that everything is unlimited and we want all choices available to us at all times. And then companies are more than willing to provide all those choices to us at all times. So I think we've sort of lost sight of what it means if you throw out a piece of food. And a lot of people aren't even aware that they waste food. There was a survey from an organization based in the United Kingdom called RAT, where a good 30 to 40% of people didn't think they were wasting any food at all. And then when they actually went through the trash can, they did a study where they actually went through people's trash, they found all sorts of waste that people just weren't even thinking about, because it was so routine at that point to throw out perfectly good food.
Hmm. What do you think, Ben? I mean, I was thinking about this. We have so many more fast food restaurants now. We live in this sort of throwaway society. We've got these massive big box stores, so you can buy so much stuff in bulk now, and there's no possible way to eat that much food before it goes bad. So what are your thoughts about why, over the last four decades, the amount of waste from the average American is up about 50%?
Yeah, mostly echo everything Brian's been saying, is just that it's all these different things just compounded, all of these different parts of the supply chain, you know, and it has to do with us getting more picky about, you know, what we want produce to look like. I wasn't around 40, 50 years ago, so I don't happen to know if they had the same, you know, displays where every single grocery store, you walk into the produce section and it has to be these displays of like these pyramids of lovely, beautiful, perfectly round, shiny apples and stuff like that. Otherwise, people wouldn't eat it. I don't happen to know. And I don't have the stats either, just in terms of, was your statistic that that's 50% increase relative to Southeast Asia?
Yeah, so it's Americans waste 10 times as much food as the average Southeast Asian, and that is up 50% from the 1970s.
Yeah, I was doing the math in my head. I was like, wait, so that means like in the 1970s we were wasting like 6 2/3 as much as the average Southeast Asian, which still isn't very good.
And so if it's about abundance, how do we change that, Brian? I mean, how do you convince people to buy less when abundance is really a norm in our society?
I think it's tricky because I think the sort of the consumer aspect is difficult. It's one of the more difficult areas to come up with solutions for because it's such a personal thing. And people don't like to be told how to eat or what to eat. They don't like to be... It feels sort of like being policed for what you're eating. So it has to be sort of an awareness raising. So once people hear how much food is being wasted, no one is really for food waste, you know? Everyone understands why letting perfectly good food go to waste is a bad thing. So it's a combination of awareness raising and then making it easier for consumers. So making smaller portion sizes available, smaller packaging sizes available, giving people tools that they can use, and just sort of making everything a little bit simpler for people not to waste the food. Because I don't want to blame consumers. I don't think it's necessarily their fault. It's just that we have this food system right now that promotes buying a lot. It promotes abundance. Mm-hmm. And so we need to just sort of start shifting public consciousness toward a more reasonable, sustainable perspective.
We had a caller earlier that wanted to give a shout out to Food Not Bombs, which provides vegetarian meals on a regular basis. And so how much of the food that's wasted here in the United States, how much of that ends up, say, in food banks, for example? Brian?
So actually, I don't know that there are good numbers right now on how much food gets redirected to food banks. That wouldn't be considered food waste because it does ultimately reach a human mouth. The sort of tricky thing about food banks, and what my concern is, so for example, in France, they just passed a law that would require grocery stores of a certain size to donate all of their surplus food to a food bank, which is a good thing if you can get it to work properly. But some areas don't have the capabilities for that. Some food banks won't have the sort of cold chain support for what's needed to keep it at the proper temperature. And my concern is we don't want to just pass the waste on to the food bank.
Well, hold that thought, we'll continue that right after this break. Today on Your Call, we are talking about food waste. Every year, 1.3 billion tons of food is thrown out. That is 1/3 of all food that is produced. And according to the United Nations, if the amount of food wasted were reduced by just 25%, there would be enough food to feed everyone. So how can we get there? This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KLW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Stay with us.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a debate about Proposition F. If Prop F passes in San Francisco, it would limit private rentals to 75 nights a year. Proponents say the regulations are needed to protect San Francisco's shrinking housing market. Opponents say short-term rentals help thousands of people make ends meet. So where do you stand on Prop F, and what questions do you have? That is tomorrow. Wednesday, we'll have a conversation with Dale Russikoff about her new book, The Prize, Who's in Charge of America's Schools. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about food waste. 1.3 billion tons of food is thrown out. That's one-third of all food that is produced. This issue is getting so much more attention, which is really great because, according to the UN, if the amount of food wasted were reduced by just 25%, there would be enough food to feed everyone. And we're talking about this issue with Brian Lipinski, associate at the World Resource Institute's food program. He works on issues of food loss and waste. Ben Simon is co-founder of Imperfect Produce, an Emeryville-based startup aimed at bringing cosmetically challenged or ugly fruits and vegetables to market for an affordable price. Right now, they are offering conventional boxes of fruits and vegetables, and soon they will be offering organic. Every year, 20% of the produce grown in the U.S. is rejected from grocery stores because it has weird shapes or sizes, and that's 6 billion pounds of produce every single year. So what questions do you have about this issue? If you work on this issue, we'd love to hear from you. And why do you think that the food being wasted in the United States is going up? It seems like people are doing so much to now solve this problem because it's getting so much more attention. So what questions do you have? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Roger in Fremont. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I had one question, one comment. The comment is just quickly something that my father grew up on a farm in Iowa, and he described their having to plow under crops to get the price supports under Roosevelt's program. And just if the person has any comment on that. And the second thing, more of a question, what's the impact of groups like the Raisin Consortium, for want of a better term, that controls the amount of raisins that are produced? It was in the news about a year or two ago that some raisin farmers were ordered to plow under or not release their raisins onto the market so the price would be stabilized, and if they wouldn't, then they would be out of the raisin consortium, you know, period. And so, you know, in terms of where the price supports factor in, on, and the fact that some, you see every now and then in the news, piles of oranges that are not allowed even to hit the market. And just, I'll take my answer, and thank you.
Okay, thank you. I haven't heard about the raisins. Have you heard about that, Brian? Brian, are you there? Did we lose Brian? Okay, well, we'll try to reconnect with Brian. Ben, you don't have an answer to that question. Are you familiar with the food waste program during the Great Depression?
I am not, okay. Unfortunately.
All right. Well, if we get Brian back, maybe we'll see if he is. Thank you for that call. Ben, we're trying to get Brian back. Do you see changes in people's attitudes toward fruits and vegetables? I mean, once they learn that 6 billion pounds of produce is being wasted simply because something looks kind of ugly, are you seeing a shift in attitude about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think when people hear the story and understand what's going on, I think it's just a natural thing to want to sort of buy that produce to sort of make a home for it. And that's very much kind of the story and the brand that we're telling with Imperfect is, you know, it's lovable produce. It looks a little bit funny, but don't we all, you know? Like, it's just everybody has imperfections, and that's what makes us who we are. And I think it's just something that really resonates with the average person is just how crazy this is that we have these ridiculous standards for strictly looks. We're not talking about taste or quality. These are just standards for how something has to look to enter into our shopping cart. And I think a lot of consumers, maybe not interested in ugly produce. They might actually care how it looks. But I think a lot of other consumers really don't care, and I think are really pretty dumbfounded when they hear this story and you know, understand how deep this issue goes. And it's really what they're not seeing in the supermarket, what they never had a chance to buy. Like, for example, there's something called double kiwis. This happens all the time. It's when two kiwis grow together, and it's just a natural thing. It happens all the time. But we don't sell double kiwis in American supermarkets. I was out in Italy this spring on a speaking tour talking about food waste at different universities. And at the university dining halls and in their grocery stores, they have double kiwis everywhere. They don't consider that as an ugly fruit or vegetable, at least not too ugly to make it to market. It's just they call it a doble. And they're like, oh, of course, yeah. But they don't have heirloom tomatoes in kiwi in Italy. In Italy, heirloom tomatoes are seen as too ugly. So it's like this totally arbitrary designation of what's beautiful and what's ugly.
And we just found an article from The Independent. A massive grocery chain in France, Intermarché, is going to sell ugly cookies after the success of their ugly fruit and veggie campaign. So it seems like this is getting a lot of attention around the globe.
Absolutely. You know, I read an article recently that ugly is one of the top five trends in the food system in 2015. A lot of people are saying ugly is the new organic.
Well, thank you again for calling in, and sorry we couldn't answer those questions, although we do have Brian back. So, Brian, are you familiar with the food waste program during the Great Depression? Is Brian back?
If you need help.
All right. Sorry about that. I guess we're having some phone issues. Well, if you'd like to call us, the listener call-in line is working. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about food waste, and this is the one stat I hope you can share with people who care about this, and how can we get here? According to the UN, if the amount of food wasted were reduced by just 25%, there would be enough food to feed everyone. That is kind of remarkable to think about.
It is, and I'm glad that you've chosen that as your statistic to really like focus this show around, because it's a hopeful statistic.
Right.
And I think a lot of the coverage around food waste can sort of be guilt-inspiring and be like, oh, yeah, you know, kind of gloom and doom, like, oh, my gosh, yeah, we're wasting so much food. But when you put it in that light of if we only could reduce food waste by 25%, we would actually have enough food to feed the world. I think that's pretty inspiring.
It is. And what role should government play? Because in September, U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack was making an announcement about this. They are setting a goal to cut food waste in half by 2030. And this is what he said. Let's be clear. Calling for 25% food waste reduction in 15 years would have been ambitious. Calling for 50% is about as bold as goals get. In fact, if this goal is met, it could theoretically mean we have eliminated domestic hunger.
That's right. Yeah, that was a quote from me from an opinion article I wrote in the U.S. News.
And so what role should government play here?
So I think government absolutely has a role. And I think it's fantastic that Secretary Vilsack and EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy came right out and said, we want to make this a priority, 50% reduction in the next 15 years. I mean, that is an extremely bold goal.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic, because I think, if anything, I think, you know, government, private industry, and nonprofits all sort of need a fire lit underneath them. And I think that's what is happening here, is the government is setting the tone, this sort of sense of urgency that this is something that we need to act on right now. We needed this yesterday. And I think that's a role of government. I think they've provided a lot of really fantastic research. I think we, kind of as Brian was saying earlier, we need a lot more research on food waste to know sort of more in depth about the issue so that we can come up with solutions to solve it. I think there's a lot of roles like that. My one critique or sort of challenge to Secretary Vilsack is just that, you know, we need a little bit more kind of an action plan, I think, of sort of maybe some benchmarks along the way, or some sort of, you know, a little bit more details about how we think we can get there, because I think it's fantastic to say 50% reduction in 15 years. But I think, you know, without any kind of action plan, it's just sort of an empty goal a little bit.
And Brian, are you back with us? Is Brian back with us?
I'm still here.
I'm glad you're here, Ben. Thank you. So what other tangible things can government do here? What role, what else do you think that they should do on this issue?
Well, there's a federal federal bill that's been trying to get, different people have been trying to pass for over 10 years, and it's the number one most important piece of legislation in food waste, in my opinion. And that is to get a permanent tax extender. And I'll just explain a little bit of the background. And that's basically that currently only the largest corporations in America can take advantage of this enhanced deduction for donating their surplus food. So only C corporations can take advantage of that tax write-off. But if you're an S corporation or an LLC, a sole proprietorship, which is most of the smaller businesses, the mom and pop shops, as well as 95%+ of farmers, you can't currently claim that deduction, or at least you don't know ahead of time that you'll be able to. And so it's a huge, huge problem. And I think we need some policy estimates on how much extra food would be donated if that was passed. I would just assume it's probably in the billions of pounds of food per year.
Wow.
And this bill actually came really close to passing this summer. Unfortunately, didn't it? Kind of got caught in a political battle.
Why? Who was against it?
So actually, ironically, it was President Obama and the Democrats actually kind of held it hostage. But there's more to that. It's not just that, is that they're trying to use it to make sure it gets paired with SNAP funding, because the Republicans wanted to take away SNAP funding and sort of do this tax extender bill instead as their way of sort of a pro-business way of helping the hungry. And the Democrats said, no way, these have to go together. Even though that they were completely in favor of the bill, they said President Obama threatened the veto on the bill, and that sort of killed it.
So, okay, so the SNAP funding is the food stamp program.
Exactly.
We have a question from Tony. Great show, necessary questions. What is the possibility that the normal channels, grocery stores, for example, could be convinced to open a separate produce section with cosmetically challenged but essentially good products? If the profit margins could be made significant, maybe they could be convinced to handle it. If it could be physically separate so as not to interfere with the, quote, pretty fruit, maybe they could see their way to handling it. Is this a solution? I love this question, Tony. And if you go to a co-op, I would highly recommend bringing this up. I think it's a great idea. Is anybody embracing this?
Absolutely. So thank you so much, Tony. You're just queuing me up with these softball questions. I love this because this is exactly what Imperfect is doing right now. So we're actually working with Raley's Supermarket. It's a regional chain. We're mostly working with their stores in the Sacramento area. So we have a pilot with them. It's actually the first time in America when an American major grocery store chain has sold ugly produce. So kind of tagging on to the worldwide trend that I was talking about, you know, you mentioned folks in France. We have folks all over the world doing this. So finally, we have an American grocery store chain doing this with Imperfect's, my company's partnership with Raley's Supermarket. So the pilot's been going for a couple months at 10 stores, and we're basically waiting to find out soon whether or not we'll expand it. But it's exactly as Tony was talking about. It's a separate section. So is in order to not cannibalize the sales of the other product. It's for a big discount, and it's sort of items that people will hopefully move pretty quickly. Items that eat well, that taste really good, and are very cheap.
Well, thank you so much. And I hope next time you all go to the grocery store, bring this up. I think it's a great idea. Ben Simon is co-founder of Imperfect Produce, an Emeryville-based startup aimed at bringing ugly fruits and vegetables to market for an affordable price. Right now, they are offering boxes of these, quote, ugly fruits and vegetables. They're conventional. Organic is coming soon. Every year, 20% of the produce grown in the U.S. is rejected from grocery stores. That amounts to 6 billion pounds of produce every single year. And I think we're joined by, we have Brian back. Brian, are you with us? Hello, Brian.
I want him to be with us so bad.
All right. I think we're having some problems there. And if you'd like to join us, our listener line does work at 866- 798-8255. The email is feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Art who says, Food Runners picks up food that would otherwise be composted or thrown away all over San Francisco. Volunteers pick up otherwise unwanted food from bakeries, corporate lunchrooms, farmers markets, and they deliver it to homeless shelters, women's shelters, and drop-in centers. If you'd like to check this out, it's foodrunners.org. Art says, Food Runners only scratches the surface, but help them save more. Thank you. That sounds fantastic, Art. Art, also related to that, there is a new app out, and I'm just looking for the name of this app. Feeding Forward. And this is a great, this is a really good new app that actually helps people. Feeding Forward. So if there is a corporate event and they have all this food and say half of it isn't eaten, they will get in touch with Feeding Forward. And then the app sends out a message to food banks. They physically go to the place, they pack up the food, and they bring it to people who need it. Which, you know, we've got all these conferences and things in San Francisco, yeah. So a ton of food is being wasted there too.
Yeah, it's great to have different food recovery innovators, you know, just sort of creating different ideas. There's actually been about five or so different apps that have kind of sprung up in different cities, and Feeding Forward's a great one. There's also a really, really great one called 0% out in the Chicago area that I think is sort of the furthest along of the different apps, and they've actually raised several hundred thousand dollars in financing and have really, really cool model. Yeah.
Actually, funny timing, Ben from Feeding Forward is calling in. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the show. Do we have Ben on the line? Ben, are you there?
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead. Thanks for calling
in. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, Ben, you are on the air.
Yeah, I worked with Feeding Forward last summer.
Okay, can you tell us how it works?
There's a bit of a delay.
Oh, turn down your radio. Okay, Ben, can you
tell... There's a bit of a delay. 1 second. I'll start talking soon.
If you can just tell us how Feeding Forward works.
All right, sorry about that.
That's okay.
So I worked with Feeding Forward last summer, and it was a great experience. Basically, we're trying to make sure that all food banks are at maximum capacity because it's locked. A lot of the time they have to go out and buy a lot of their food from people that they're giving recurring meals to, like the elderly or the disabled, and that really shouldn't be happening when up to 40% of food is wasted here in America. And basically how it works is you fill out our form online, just go to feedingforward.com. If you have a catered event, perfect. If you have a kind of a recurring pickup, you kind of work things out with us. And then we schedule a time for our drivers to come pick up the food, and we send it to local food banks and food shelters in the area.
That's such a great program. What has the response been so far?
People are really excited about it. Right now, things are only getting started, but the amount of passion behind the movement is incredible. We've made the front page of Reddit twice. People come in from all over the world on our Contact Us page. People from Pakistan, Bangladesh saying, come here. The demand is incredible for a product like this.
So fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Again, this is an app, Feeding Forward, and the pickup rate is 99%. It basically enables businesses to receive a tax write-off and a reduction in disposal costs for providing meals to people in need. So anybody who has a conference, for example, if they've got 500 lunches
Hello?
And only 200 have been eaten, they can use this app to send the food to someone who needs it. 606,000 people have been fed so far. So this is fantastic. I call this technology for good. Do you think that we're going to see more things like this, Ben? Because it just seems like there's such a need for these kinds of programs.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, because I didn't mention, but sort of before Imperfect, I've been working on a different startup as well in the food waste space. Called Food Recovery Network. So I've been around for about 4 or 5 years in this space, seeing all these different innovations come about, and it's been a huge pickup. It's just accelerating. You know, every week, you know, every month, there's something new. You know, if you really are tuned into the food waste world, there's so many new cool things going on.
And I was going to say, what makes the biggest impact? But it seems like from the, you know, feeding forward where, say, 10 people are fed because these meals are left at a corporate event, that's just as important as making a big impact, right? I mean, it's all, it seems to be all important.
It's all good. It's all important. You know, it's again, there's so many different parts of the supply chain, you know, whether it's farm level, which is the difference we're trying to make with Imperfect, or if your intervention is like feeding forward and it's more focused around corporate events, or if it's, you know, about raising awareness at the household level for how people can reduce food waste. Actually, one of my colleagues, Dana Gunders from NRDC, has just released this awesome, awesome book called The Waste-Free Kitchen Handbook. And she lives in the area, and it's just a really cool handbook for how everyday people can just reduce waste, you know, through cooking, like just normally cooking in the kitchen.
Mm. We have an email from Shin who says, I encourage everyone to take their leftovers home when you go to a restaurant. It's an easy way to cut out food waste. Even if you don't want to eat the food anymore, it's easy to find needy people on the street who will accept that food. That is a very good point. A lot of people order too much at a restaurant, and then they're stuffed, and they say, oh, I don't want any of that. Well, you can put it all in a box and just leave it on the street.
It's so easy.
Yeah, so thank you for that, Shin. Pete writes in the 70s, I watched my mom conserve damaged produce, and I thought nothing of it. Now I love to cook, and part of the pleasure I take in being creative and budget conscious, I create budget-conscious meals for my family. A couple of years ago, I noticed that Berkeley Bowl in Berkeley had a section where they put imperfect produce in bags and sold them at a huge discount. Sometimes it can be a dollar for 5 pounds of fruit. This section has become a kind of target for shoppers who get in early on delivery days.
Great. I've heard about it. I've heard really good things about that section.
Thank you. Tuffy writes, Mary Risley and her Food Runners program, she started it many years ago, and it runs in conjunction with her upscale cooking school. Food Runners goes to 2 grocery stores, it caters kitchens, or anywhere that will call them in and pick up perishable as well as canned items that can be distributed to food banks. The food also goes to institutions and places like Stepping Stone, which relies on food donations. Thank you for that. And Leslie writes, Real Food Company on Polk used to bag imperfect mixed vegetables and other produce for quick sale at a reduced price. They quit doing that a few years ago with the reason given that too many poor people were coming into the store. I don't know if we
Yikes.
Can verify that. All right. Well, thank you for sending in that email. Let's hope that's not the case.
Yeah, hopefully not. Wow.
Let's go next to, is it Brian? Yes. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, this is not Brian.
All right, sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I was shopping in Safeway. They have a huge section where it's organic, and the avocados were just rotting there, you know, really overripe, all the tomatoes and everything. And I talked to some people there. I said, why don't you mark this down because it's so expensive? Oh, we can't do that. I said, you can't mark it down and sell it? You're going to let it rot and throw it away? And he goes, well, that's how it works. I was appalled. I just wanted to tell you that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That is awful.
And
yeah.
You see it all the time.
And it just makes sense. It's just a sensible thing to do to just mark it down a little bit. You know, it's clearly lost some of its value, so it should be a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm with it.
Thank you. Ben, can you talk about the conversations that you've had with grocery stores about having an imperfect section?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, so, you know, we've had conversations with several grocery stores. Again, we're starting with Raley's, so that's our number one priority, is to support that partnership. And it's just been awesome that Raley's has taken the lead here and taken the first step as a big retailer. But, you know, we spoke at the Global Sustainability Summit in Denver, which is sort of the big sustainability-focused summit for all the big grocery stores in the country. So we have a lot of conversations going right now. I think there's definitely some hesitations, but we're sort of getting started slowly and just looking at, you know, how to best meet their needs and you know, what products to offer that will really fly off the shelves.
How big do you think this can get? Because it seems like the more outreach and the more awareness that this gets, it becomes more popular. So, I mean, we're talking about 6 billion pounds of produce going to waste simply because the fruits and vegetables aren't very attractive.
Yeah, I think it's got legs. I think it has huge potential. You know, I obviously, you know, working on it myself, you know, but I think it's something that resonates with everybody. We've had people from all over the country and even internationally writing us, seeing how they can get some imperfect produce. You know, I think it's definitely something that appeals to a very broad audience, whether you're just trying to save a little bit of money or you really like the social aspect of being able to reduce food waste, especially in this drought.
Right. Oh,
that's
yeah.
The other thing that we haven't talked about is just how much water goes into the food that we're growing. It's actually every year in America, about 25% of our water is spent on food that's never even eaten.
There was a piece at the Huffington Post, how you can fight the drought by eating ugly vegetables. So this is starting to get more attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially here in California, that's something that's resonated with our customer base.
A lot of people have been calling in about gleaning. It's the act of collecting leftover crops from farmers' fields after they've been harvested. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I love gleaning. Used to work closely back in Maryland, where I'm from, with the Mid-Atlantic Gleaning Network. Great organization. But it's basically gleaning is just going out there into the field. With a group of volunteers, it's often, you know, church groups or youth groups will go out there and basically spend an afternoon just picking produce that otherwise would be left behind. And farmers just say, you know, they'll open up their field to a food bank or to a gleaning organization and say, go at it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for raising awareness about this issue and doing so much to tackle this issue. Again, the one line that we really need to share, according to the UN, if the amount of food wasted were reduced by 25%, there would be enough food to feed everyone. Ben Simon is CEO of Imperfect Produce. It's a startup in Emeryville that aims to bring cosmetically challenged or ugly fruits and veggies to market at an affordable price. You can find more information about their boxes at yourcallradio.org. Ben, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Whoa! Thank you. How would Proposition F change the short-term rental market in San Francisco? On the next Your Call, we'll host a debate about Prop F. If it passes, it would limit private rentals to 75 nights per year. Proponents say the regulations are needed to protect the city's shrinking housing market. Opponents say short-term rentals help thousands of people make ends meet. So where do you stand on Prop F, and what questions do you have? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.